Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you. This is Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, here with both doctors today, Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon, on this very spring-like day. We've got rain. last week we were here, we had sunshine.
And summer.
It was quite lovely.
Yes.
I understand we've got a chance of rain every day for the
every
next
day.
10 days or so.
Pretty much.
That's not unusual. That's normal.
Shocker. Oh, I hope you were able to enjoy some of that sunshine we had. I got outside and planted some things, and they're looking good because we're getting well watered. So
that's right.
And I caught myself sneezing once or twice, and it's like, okay, yeah, those things are blooming.
What, do you grow flowers or vegetables?
I am flowers, but I do like tomatoes. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of a fun one. Mm. I'll do patio ones, little baby ones.
Mm, yeah, nice.
Those are good. So, okay, should we dive in and find out what's making medical news with Dr. Mixon?
Well,
yeah. What's making?
What's your medical news, Dr. Mixon?
Yes, medical news. You were talking about some studies on fat that you had read about and cognition.
This was a study that basically we have known for some time that the higher your percentage of body fat, the more rapidly your brain function declines. So cognitive decline and dementia are much more common in overweight people than in lean people. But there was a recent study that was looking at gender differences, male versus female, and finding out that in women, it is a function of the total amount of body fat compared to muscle mass. So the heavier a woman is and the lower her muscle mass is, the higher her risk of cognitive decline. With men, it was more of a visceral fat thing. The higher the fat around the liver, the pancreas, and so on, this was the big determinant of cognitive decline in men.
Mm.
So it's still more fat equals more cognitive decline, but with men, it was less the total body fat as opposed to the visceral body fat. Mm-hmm. So the fat on their belly and on their butt and on their thighs and so on, their man boobs, and that is not what raised their risk of cognitive decline. In fact, the guy with the big, round, but hard belly, in which all the fat is underneath the abdominal muscles and is pushing them out, so you got a very firm abdomen, those men are the ones at the highest risk of cognition. But a soft jelly belly with them did not have as big an impact.
Mm.
But with women, it didn't matter what kind of fat or where the fat triggered cognitive decline no matter what.
Mm. Interesting. You know, I mean, when at Bella Medica, we see patients that come in for treatments to reduce their subcutaneous fatty tissue. So that's the soft fat.
That's right.
We actually feel for it. And if they don't have that, then they're not candidates. And again, we do this only if their BMI is normal. So they have to, or slightly higher than ideal. Because, you know, it's not a fat loss. It's mainly, it's not a weight loss procedure. It's basically redistribution and removal of subcutaneous fatty tissue,
right,
which kind of contours the abdomen a little differently.
Yeah, well, I mean, the nice thing about that is you can take off fat from the lower part, upper thighs, lower butt.
Yeah.
For instance, if a woman wants to reshape her rear end, we can do that.
Right.
You know, we can kill some of the fat where we want to kill the fat.
Right.
If she's got a reasonably good belly, but her love handles are too big, we can knock down those love handles.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of things that can be done. But, you know, the other thought that I was also talking about is the GLP-1 agonist, the new drugs that are being used extensively now to help with weight loss. And so if you're not monitoring carefully, you might be losing more muscle than fat. And the goal is to lose fat and less muscle.
Precisely.
And so you want to make, if you are on that drug or you're thinking of taking it, please make sure that you get advice from your providers about how to maintain muscle mass, and you do have to exercise to work out to maintain as much muscle as possible.
The GLP agonists are revolutionary as far as getting rid of excess body fat, though. I mean, that's why they're sold out all over the country.
Right.
It's even hard sometimes to get it because everybody's now wanting to use it, and it does work.
Right.
You know, it's got side effects. You know, you can end up with abdominal cramping or diarrhea, abdominal pain, and so on. So these are, you know, are potential side effects. And some people have such bad effects, they cannot use the drug. But most people seem to do pretty well with it, with minimal adverse effects. So, you know, I like the GLP agonist a whole lot. But, you know, it's a universal fat loss. And one of the things people are...
Which is what women need.
Well, yes, except... Women, just like men, when you get fat, you put extra fat on your face.
Mm.
And with aging, we normally lose the structural fat on our face. That's why everything starts to sag.
Mm-hmm.
And you start looking old because everything is sagging and the lines are getting accentuated. Women that are a bit overweight have put some extra fat there and smoothed it out and compensated for some of that age-related loss. Then they go on the GLP agonist, and they lose that fat on their face. Now all of a sudden everything is sagging, you know, and they're calling it. They're saying this is
GLP
caused
face,
by the drug.
Yeah,
the GLP face.
Yeah.
And it's because you've been losing the structural fat on your face for decades, but you've been hiding it because you're putting some extra fat on as you put on your total body fat.
Yeah.
And then we start getting rid of that fat, and all of a sudden now you've got really sags.
Right. But, you know, that can be considered even a cosmetic effect, which people can go ahead and help you with later on.
Because we can now go in and do the fillers.
And surgery or whatever you need. But the point is that the body fat is a inflammatory marker that increases risk for many problems, including dementia, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancer, degenerative joint disease, so on and so forth. And to reduce that is not a matter of just looking pretty. It is a matter of health benefits.
Yes.
And now for the first time, there is a drug or a class of drugs that can help you achieve your goals.
That's right. But we need to recognize there are downsides to everything
like
we do.
Like everything, yes.
Just like everything else.
And
in
this
case,
it has its fair share of them.
It does indeed. And some people simply can't use the medicines because of the side effects.
Right.
And even those that do it very effectively, as I said, often get a cosmetic hit. Because now all of a sudden their face is sagging where it wasn't before.
And also, Jerry, some people can reach a certain threshold and can't lose any past that. There's a tolerance effect, and despite increasing the dose, they can't drop the weight. And again, you know, we keep talking about dropping the weight. Here, the big issue is dropping the fat and not just
the
weight.
Yes.
Because you will slow down your metabolism even with the drug if you keep losing muscle and less fat.
That's right.
And as you do that, your rate of weight loss will continue to reduce over time. And then there are many mechanisms by which you get to that threshold, and some people just can't lose any beyond that.
Yeah. 1 pound of muscle burns as many calories as nearly 20 pounds of fat. Okay, so if you're losing muscle, you're burning fewer and fewer calories. And that makes it harder to lose the fat because your metabolism is slowed down and you're just not burning. So we want you to keep the muscle. You need to keep the muscle to keep the fat burn down.
Right, right. Right, but again, as you said in the beginning, it's a revolutionary drug, and they have made a huge difference in a lot of patients' lives and indeed their futures, because it's not just a self-confidence and self-esteem issue. It's you've literally reduced their risk for heart disease, diabetes, dementia, cancer, degenerative joint disease, and therefore their whole future will be different than if they did not use the medication.
Absolutely. No, we are fans of the medication. We just want everybody to understand that, like everything, it follows Dr. Mixon's rules of medicine. First rule of medicine, anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. There will be downsides. You just have to know what they are and take them into account. Second rule, proper dose of any drug is just enough to do the job. And because the higher the dose, the more side effects. And the third rule is, if you don't measure, you don't know. So we need to measure. And then there's the fourth rule that I absolutely hate, but is something we have to bear in mind.
Yeah,
you can do everything right, and things can still go to hell. Mm. That's just the way the universe is made.
All right. And you were talking about semaglutides. Would the brand names that people would be hearing in the news be Ozempic and Mounjaro? Those are the meds, weight loss things you're talking about.
That's right. Yeah.
And for a while, I know Ozempic was hard to get because so many people that weren't diabetic were taking it just for the weight loss.
Yeah, and they still are.
Okay.
And that's still an ethical dilemma, right? Should you use it if you don't have the medical issues, and should you not? Well, you're going to get the medical issues. What are we waiting for? Mm. So, you know, I struggle with those as well as all the patients do too. You want to do the right thing always, but sometimes you want to prevent disease as well.
And the big question is, they lose the weight, they go off of the medication,
and then they start
comes back.
What'll often start happening is they have to take it every week until they lose the weight, and then they may use it 1 week out of the month.
Just for maintenance or something.
Yeah.
Just enough to do the job.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So lifestyle and diet
again,
probably is.
This is not, you know, okay, I'll take it for 3 months and I'll fix the problem and then I'll go back to my normal life.
No.
You have to maybe plan for the long haul.
Yeah.
Your normal life is why you got fat.
Yeah.
You don't want to go back to that.
Right.
Okay. We require a long-term lifestyle change.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Thank you, doctors. Here is that number to call with your questions. And we already have two callers on the line, 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757 with your questions. We'll be right back. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Yeah, Forever Young. Rod Stewart there. Ooh, yeah. Love that song the first time. Still love it.
Great song, yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect song for our show.
Yeah.
We want you to feel forever young. Good morning. Leading Edge Medicine here. Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samiri Umat. And your phone calls. We are headed to North Bend. We have John on the line. Good morning, John.
Hello, John.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
So I was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. Starting in February 2017, the PSA level was 0.7. And approximately 30 months, about 3 years, it had doubled to 1.4. And 2 years later, it doubled again, June 2022 to 2.8. And then June 2023, it was 4.4. My doc said, let's wait, see the next test. December 2023, it was still 4.4. And at the time, I was taking saw palmetto, gone to see a urologist early February. And then they recommended an MRI real quick. They didn't like the fact that the score had gone up so fast.
Mm.
So MRI, and then shortly thereafter, a biopsy. and results were a Gleason score of 7, which showed prostate cancer.
Mm. Yes. And, you know, as we were discussing on the last show, that rapid rise is worrisome to us because it says that it increases the risk that you've got a rapidly growing tumor that may spread relatively young. And he is a young man. So, you know.
They never said the word tumor, but they said an anomaly of 1 centimeter.
Mm. Okay, well, centimeter is just under half an inch. Mm. So, you know, it's as prostate cancers go, it's good sized.
Yeah, it's large.
The question then is, you know, where is it located in the prostate? Is it in the center of the gland? Is it in the central lobe? Is it down low, or up high? Is it over near the margins? You know, near the connective tissue that encloses the gland, the capsule, because all that makes a difference in how easy it is to get rid of. But also because you're a young guy, you're only in your 50s, we would like to pick a method that does two things. A, ablates all of the tumor, but has the lowest risk of interfering with your sex life because, you know, this is in your 50s is still a very important life. If you were 95 years old, I'd be less concerned. So that's why I brought up a new procedure, and it's a TULSA, TULSA, okay? And you probably ought to look that up. There are several websites now, lots of places that are doing it. You know, Stanford is big on it. There's a lot of places that are doing it. I'm presuming there are places here nearby that are also working with this procedure, but it does virtually no damage to the nerves, and to the nerves of the penis go right around the capsule, and so if with a more traditional shelling it out with the cutting loop, it's easy to damage those nerves and traumatize them and impair your sexual functioning. But now the other way, of course, is they're doing robotic surgery to do a total removal of the gland. And with robotic surgery, the risk of incontinence and sexual dysfunction is relatively low. So, you know, there's a variety of ways. This particular one that I'm talking about is new, so we don't have as great a numbers. But it seems to be an effective way of getting rid of cancers that are central, that are in the middle of the prostate, where you don't have to worry about going out to the edges. But if it's out on the margins, then this is probably not as good a procedure. So, you know, I would read about it. I'd chat with some doctors and that are using it. But I also then chat with your urologist and say, okay, where is this tumor? You know, get a copy of the ultrasound. Take the ultrasound to your consulting urologists. When you're talking about having a surgery that can have long-term impact on important parts of your life, then you want to get more than one opinion, and you want to get a variety of options, and you need an honest look at the pros and the cons of each one so you can make up your mind what you want to do.
Yeah, I'm actually going to see a second urologist next month.
Good.
Appointment scheduled.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And they have all the information already in hand.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I'm also going to see a radiologist, too, for the Swedish for their CyberKnife, which is 5 years.
Yep. Yeah, and that's also a good option.
Right.
So, you know, we've got a lot of ways to treat prostate cancer now.
Yeah.
And different ones have different strengths and weaknesses mm-hmm. depending on the size of the tumor, how long you've had the tumor, where the tumor is located in the prostate. And then, of course, the genome of the tumor. You know, your doctor did a biopsy, so he got a piece of the tumor. My hope is that they mm-hmm. did a genetic evaluation on that tumor because that will give us a lot of information about what the risk of it, how likely it is to spread, mm-hmm. how fast it tends to grow, and so on. So the genetic analysis on that biopsy is of critical importance for making really intelligent decisions about how you're going to follow it up and take care of it.
Speaking of genetics, my cousin, who's just a few years older than me, is also going through the exact same thing at the exact same time.
Yeah.
And he's having surgery later this week.
Okay.
And this is, you know, this is a disease that has interest to me because I'm a 76-year-old man and my father had prostate cancer, you know, and my mother had both breast and colon cancer.
Right.
So, you know, I'm interested in all of them.
Right, right. And again, a common cancer. And, you know, in the past, as we've always said, it's so slow growing that the risk for mortality from it is low. And then post-surgery, too, 10-year survival is very high.
Yep, yeah. And almost any way we treat it, you get a good result as far as the cancer goes. The concern that we're trying to get better and better is the adverse effects of the procedures.
Yeah.
And there's wide variation in those. And which procedure works best for you depends on your tumor. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, you need to get a variety of options from a variety of physicians. And you need to know the pros and cons of each of them before you make up your mind.
Right.
Because you're going to live with the results.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I'm actually leaning towards surgery to, eliminate that whole option. And thus far, it has not spread.
Yep.
But, yeah, I do want to I want to seek out see all the options, put everything on the table.
That's right.
For sure.
Well, and the nice thing about MRIs we can do now. You know, when I started medicine back nearly 50 years ago, a CAT scan was the brand new fancy-dancy technology. Now with the MRIs, we can find tumors when they're very small, and we can localize them very precisely, and we can follow you up. You know, if your PSA drops to zero and stays to zero or close to zero, then we don't have anything to worry about. But if your PSA starts to rise again 2, 3, 5 years up the road, you know, we can go back in with the MRI and find where the problem is and probably take care of it very quickly and early. So, but whatever you do with this, you want to see to it that your PSA drops to basically non-existent levels. And then you want to still be checked periodically to make sure it stays down at non-existent levels.
Yeah.
Because if the PSA starts to rise again, that says you've got tumor hiding somewhere.
And again, you know, this is a chronic issue now. You'll be in and out of doctor's offices even after your treatment is done. And then you have to decide about what lifestyle choices you want to make for yourself.
That's right.
Dr. Michael Greger, he's an MD, is a holistic physician, written extensively about diet and about lots of cancers. And in his book, How Not to Die, he writes about different forms of cancer and what to eat to remain healthy for prolonged periods of time subsequently. He is plant-based, so he focuses more on the plant-based type of a diet. But nonetheless, your lifestyle choices going forward will be very important.
Yeah. And interestingly, you know, used to be, doctors said once you had your prostate cancer, you should never, ever, ever take testosterone the rest of your life. In fact, they put you on blockers.
Yeah.
Now, in people with a Gleason 7 like you, if we get rid of that cancer, most urologists are letting you now go back on testosterone for the rest of your life even. And some data is now even showing that men that get put on testosterone afterwards have a lower risk of reoccurrence
than
men that don't.
That is very true,
All right.
Dr. Morgenteller's literature is very indicative that testosterone therapy after prostate cancer may prevent a recurrence.
All right. You hear the music. Time to take a break. And John, thank you so much for your call. Lots of great information there. We will be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. And if you have a question for the doctors, here's that number to call. 206-421-5757. We'll be back with John from Tacoma next. Stay right there.
Yesterday's gone. Yesterday.
stop believing. Good morning. It's Leading Edge Medicine, taking your phone calls, talking with the doctors today on what is bothering you, what ails you, what symptoms you're having, or a family member, about your health as we're all aging. We have John from Tacoma on the line right now. Good morning, John. Thank you for calling.
Hello, John.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about a drug mestinin, I think it is, for ocular myasthenia gravis. Uh-huh. If you know of the side effects of that or would know anything about that, that might be for Dr. Gilbert. I don't know if
this
you know
would be mostly
about
Dr.
That.
Gilbert.
Oh,
yeah.
Actually, he's coming. Okay. Let me see. When is he coming, Jerry? He is going to be here on April 13th.
April 13th. So in about. Yeah.
Okay. I'll check with that. I have one other question with when I just got the diagnosis for that, and then sent me in for a chest X-ray or CT scan on my chest. What would that have to do with the ocular myasthenia gravis?
Is okay. Well, let me explain myasthenia gravis a little bit, because most people have no idea what we're talking about, okay? This is a primarily autoimmune disease in which you make antibodies that damage the acetylcholine production or receptors. So acetylcholine is the neurotransmitter that allows you to send signals from the nerves to the muscles to make the muscles fiber. Or fire. And so myasthenia gravis, as depending on how severe it is, can be everything from just the tiny 12 muscles around your eyes that allow them to focus and track up, down, side to side, and so on, all the way up to making your arms and legs so weak you can't walk. So the earliest symptom of the mildest forms is people start to see double.
And so those
muscles around the eye have to be very precisely aligned all the time for the two eyes to give us one image. And with early myasthenia gravis, as those muscles get weak, one eye will veer off somewhere, and so you start getting two separate images or overlapping images. The idea is to either increase the neurotransmitter levels so that you can overcome that weakness, or to attack the antibodies that are causing the problem and solve your problems that way. So we have several different disease-modifying drugs that can be used, and Dr. Gilbert would be the real expert on which ones he would use for someone with your symptoms just involving the eyes and not the major motor groups like your arms and your legs. In severe cases, myasthenia gravis can actually impair your breathing and can be a life-threatening condition. And so in those people, we really, really, really have to be aggressive and use, big gun drugs to knock down their immune response. And I've just told you about everything I know about myasthenia gravis because it's one of those things I learned about in medical school back in the 1970s and have never seen a case in my life. So
just my luck.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the information, and I'll call back when Dr. Gilbert's on and see what he can tell me. Yeah. But I really appreciate the information.
All right. You take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Good luck. Yeah.
All right. Very good. All right. We are going to take another caller. We're going to take a ferry to Whidbey Island right now. Dan is on the line. Good morning, Dan.
Hello, Dan.
Hey. I had some type 2 diabetes problems after a car accident. I was one of the family members that didn't have problems with diabetes after the car accident. I mean, I'd already gotten blood work before the car accident. Said, hey, you're fine, no problems whatsoever. 3 months later, type 2 diabetes. I'm going, wow.
Did you have abdominal trauma?
I had abdominal trauma. I had chest trauma. Okay. They were thinking about removing both my knees. They were thinking about pinning my ankle permanently. They were going to remove my shoulder joint and replace it. And I said, oh, my gosh, with faith, I mean, I might as well give up life because I used to walk the mountains of the Pacific Northwest with a 30-pound pack,
yeah.
And I could run a 49.8 quarter mile at 57 years old.
Sure.
And I'm going, whoa, get hit with a car right broadside in my driver's door, and next thing you know, my health is yep. just totally, you know, its quality yep. of life is gone, right?
Right. Mm. Yeah, well, and with abdominal and lower chest trauma, you traumatize the pancreas. And it's
yeah.
that
it's abdomen, abdomen, everything.
Yeah, and with that pancreas trauma, that's what triggers your ability to make, to sense your glucose levels and to make insulin levels appropriately. And so it's not uncommon with significant abdominal, especially upper abdominal, lower chest trauma, to get a reactive type 2 diabetes. Now, the good news is that since this is a reaction to a traumatic event, sometimes your pancreas will recover and you'll end up no longer being a type 2 diabetic. So that's, you know, that's something to hope for.
Yeah, this is what I've been hoping for, but I had no help from any medical facility on Whidbey Island. They keep, what do you call it? They have doctors that they okay, you're in here, but you're given a separate bill. Being on Medicare, they would give me real short appointments and then kick me out. And then
yep.
they'd give me big bills, you know?
Yep.
And I'm going, this is no help. And they're all using the excuse, well, it's COVID. It's because of baloney. I just didn't feel like they wanted to do their job on Whidbey. So I went to a different place over in Everett, and they got me with an OBGYN or whatever it is. And then they gave me a note to go to a diabetic place in Everett.
Good.
They had some new machine where they gave me a blood test and found that out, you know, and I'm trying to work with these meters that have been sitting off the coast in boats, you know, you prick your finger, you read the meter, but you're reading the meters at the wrong time, and you don't have anything that you can actually base your blood sugar on. So I was asking on Whidbey for a medical device that fits on my arm that I can read
yes.
off my phone that gives me a graph so whatever I yep. eat, it can tell me what I'm eating, what I'm doing wrong.
Yep.
So
I'm follow your blood sugar 24/7.
Continuous yeah. glucose monitor, CGMs.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. So I went totally, one of those meters. And now I'm able to read the graph, and I'm going totally keto. I don't eat as much. I'm on Mounjaro because of my health, not because I wanted to lose weight. I was already losing from 200. I was at 158 pounds and an 8-pack before I got hit with this car.
Wow.
I went up to 260 pounds because I couldn't
wow.
basically on crutches for 6 years, and now 3 years later, after that 6 years, I'm down to 210 pounds, and I'm starting to go down even further.
Right.
I've enacted. What do you call it? Where you don't eat for a while.
Fasting. Yeah.
Yes, I'm doing the fasting. It's resetting my stomach. It's resetting my mind. It's resetting my body. And I'm just telling everybody out there. I want them to know that when you go to a hospital, you can't have a bunch of people just coming and going, saying they're doctors and giving you short appointments and then kicking you out the door. You need to go to somebody that knows what they're doing. Over in Everett, these doctors that I found, they all work together. They're all paid by the same people. Your bills are being taken care of all by the same people. You know, you ain't got 10 bills going out to different people. And
all right.
now I'm doing well.
You're
my
on the way.
My blood sugar was 383 for 3 months prior to
wow.
getting a blood sugar meter. My brain was frying. My body was frying, and nobody gave a rat's tail. So
okay.
now
you hear the music? We got to take a break, my friend. I'll get back and give you another minute or two to rant, and then we'll respond to it, all right?
Yes, you stay right there, Dan. And Ellie, we're going to get to you, Sheila, and Dan, another Dan, in just a moment. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.
Today, and tonight, and tomorrow, let's play. All right.
Okay, we're back.
Okay, Dan.
Leading Edge Medicine, and Dan, you had just one more minute.
Well,
ish.
One more minute. I had 16.8 average sugar, and 383 was my highest in 3 months.
Wow.
Now I'm at 6.2 average, and my blood sugar is about 116.
Okay.
So these people really did good for me, like you guys do for other people. And I just wanted to know, let you know how wonderful it is to have some people on you on the radio like you guys that think about people's care.
Well, you know,
God
they.
Bless.
Well, thank
oh,
you.
Thank you, Dan.
You. And yes, we do care. Yep. And of course, that is part of why our doctors spend an hour with each and every visit.
That's right.
We don't believe in 5-minute visits. That's just silly. You cannot handle complex physiologic problems in a matter of minutes. Mm-hmm. You need time to get to know the patient, to understand where their concerns are, to find out, you know, what's really going on. So, and there's just the decency. Human beings need to be listened to,
mm-hmm.
which is why sometimes people tell me that I let folks rattle on a little too long, but I'd rather, you know, let them over-rattle than under-rattle.
There
just
you go.
There's,
thank you,
know.
And God bless you guys.
All right. You guys take care, Dan.
Thank you for that,
bye
Dan.
Bye.
Good luck, Dan.
You know,
uh-huh.
but Dan finally got on the right equipment, which is a continuous glucose monitor.
Mm-hmm. You see,
the sad part is he had to look it up and take it to the doctors and say, here's what I want.
Well, you know, and it's always sometimes frustrating because so many people that technically through insurance do not qualify for it, but would benefit so much from having that equipment.
Yes.
Because it would save the healthcare cost dollars too,
yep.
if they did something, you know, by themselves rather than yes. become diabetic and then come in yeah. with complications.
You
later
give the patient
on.
A $200 yeah. piece of equipment. It lets them monitor things efficiently. And it saves them a $50,000 hospital
exactly.
bill.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's wow. so frustrating. So frustrating.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, I'm glad that he has recovered. Poor guy seems to have had a traumatic journey.
Yes.
And that he's actually now on the road to recovery. He
and I'm glad he's now with yeah. physicians that will take the time to listen to him.
Yes.
Yeah, he's persevered.
He's getting healthy.
Yeah.
Yep. Very good.
All right. Who do we have next in line?
We're headed to Seattle. We have Ellie on the line. Good morning, Ellie.
Hello, Ellie.
Good morning. My question's kind of small, but
okay.
or short anyway. I'm just sort of starting to go on a probiotic, you know, and I just kind of wanted to do – I don't want to take a whole bunch of stuff I don't need. I just want to start out slow. And I wondered if you could give some – suggestions on maybe the specific type of strain that would be the thing as a female, and I'm 70, would be something that I would want to watch for.
Yeah. There aren't really a single strain. Remember, your gut microbiome has billions and billions of bacteria with many different kinds. And the restriction in a probiotic capsule is that they can't put in that many strains. So you
right.
want one that has many billions of colonies. So not just 4 or 5, but like 50 or 100 billion colonies. And you
okay.
want as much variety as they can possibly put in there.
And the other thing is frequently these the ones that are dried on the shelf are losing potency the longer they sit there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they may have been manufactured and then they go to the warehouse where who knows how long they sat in the warehouse and what the temperatures were in the warehouse. Then they get in a truck, they get shipped out to the store. They sit in the store for who knows how long before you buy them. So they do have some that are basically refrigerated from day one, and they are kept refrigerated, and even in the store, they're not out on the shelf. They are in a refrigerated cabinet for you to take. This is what we do at our clinic.
That's right.
Is we have a,
you do refrigerated. You suggest fermented type?
Well, that's foods that you want to eat in your diet. Right. Fermented foods definitely are better for the gut microbiome.
And fermented foods not only have the metabolic products from the bacteria that fermented the food, okay, you sometimes get some crossover from those bacteria that did the fermentation may still be alive in the fermented food, as long as
and
you're
you
not cooking
get,
it.
And you can get some of the fermented food in just things like, you know, dill pickles and pickled
kimchi,
asparagus
if you like
and things
it.
Like that.
Sauerkraut, you know, so many other people, the kimchi definitely.
Does kefir have probiotics?
Yes, many
does.
Of them do.
Yeah,
now,
it does.
Some kefirs are pasteurized, in which most of the bacteria are killed. But there
so
are
you would
kefirs.
Want unpasteurized.
Yeah,
okay.
Right, so you want a kefir that is, still has live culture in it. Mm.
Okay, and then my last question, which is short also, is fish oil or krill? What if I'm starting to take that as a supplement, you know, with omegas, do you, I mean, I hear things back and forth and, it's hard to Google.
I generally stick with the fish oil, and the reason is simply the volume of oil is much larger. The krill oils have very little oil. That's why they're in little tiny capsules.
I like the little tiny capsules.
Most people do,
But the volume of oil you're putting in your body is low. And one of the problems with many women especially is they're not getting enough omega-3 oils in their diet. They're getting mostly omega-6s. And so they get dry skin with flaking and so on. And upping your dose of omega-3s is one of the best cures for that. And so
if I'm eating salmon twice a week,
that would be good.
You know, not Atlantic salmon, but wild caught or frozen wild. If I'm eating that twice a week, do I need to supplement still with omegas, you think?
Well, it depends on how much salmon you're eating. You know, the salmon is an oily fish and it's rich in omega-3s, and that part is very good. On the other hand, if you're watching your diet and trying to keep your weight down, your portions of salmon might be pretty small. So it's not just what you eat, it's how much of it you eat.
Yeah, and we actually do measure in our clinic. We do an omega check.
Okay. Well, I'm planning to come to you guys' clinic anyway the next time you have an open clinic to check it all out because, I've been listening to you on the radio for a while and you've had some great ideas and suggestions that have been helpful. So, you've been really helpful. That gets me started on where I need to go. So I really appreciate my call today.
And Ellie, you know what? You can come anytime. You just need an appointment, and we would love to talk with you and do that free health analysis on you and then do a blood workup to see where you are. So, all right.
Great. Thanks, you guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You bet. We're going to take a break here in just a bit, but I'm going to go ahead and give you that number to call so that you, like Ellie, can come on into longevity and see what we do.